You are listening to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond, where hosts from the LCC Library sit down with writers, publishers, entrepreneurs, and literary enthusiasts of all types. Join your hosts, Amy Ewald, Robin Moore, John Salaichi, and Abby Thibault as we explore the very heart of the written word.
Hello, and welcome to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond. I'm your host, Amy Ewald, and my co-host, Robin Moore, is here today, too. And today on the show, we have a poet, a writer, a counselor, a dad, really a man of many talents. And he is the author of two poetry books, Are You Ready to Love Yourself, a Black Man, and The Embryo of My Manhood. He recently moved into the area of children's literature and self-published a book called 'Cause I'm a Baby. I love saying that.
Yeah.
Please welcome to the show, Chris Amos Lopez.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a joy to be here.
Yes, welcome, Chris. Welcome.
Yeah, we're happy to have you here today. We're happy to be back in the studio recording. I had a little bit of a break for summer and that, so we're back. So, Chris, like I said before, you're an author, a counselor, a parent. Seems like you wear a lot of different hats.
Yeah, for sure.
So tell us a little bit about all the different stuff that you do. And then, more importantly, how do you even find time for all of this?
That's the hardest part. But I started when I was young. I started writing when I was young, like around 11 years old in the sixth grade. Mm-hmm. We had a poetry class, so I went to University Preparatory Academy in Detroit. This was actually the first year that they opened. And since then, like from that poetry class, I think that's when I really started to dive into writing, partly because of that emotional expression, right? Mm-hmm. And I grew up listening to like rap music, hip hop music. So like Tupac, Eminem, DMX, like the strong personalities and the deliverer of words. And I think I started to kind of resonate with that style of expression. And since then, I just haven't stopped writing. And, you know, I started to expand a little bit and just trying to grow. So getting into like the children's like literature and just kind of going from there. But it's hard to like balance, but I think that's kind of the fun part too.
Yeah. Yeah. So you write poetry and you have two published books. How would you describe your poetry style to your listeners?
The influence from the like Eminem, Tupac, DMX, from the rap and hip hop music, I think that really resonates with my like style of writing. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like write with music in mind, almost like a free verse type of approach. But I have that rhythm and that pattern, that flow in mind. Kind of depends on the piece, but I think I really do take a lot from music. So I try to blend in the music and the poetry writing, so it kind of speaks from the page.
I kind of saw that in your, I read your poetry book, Are You Ready to Love Yourself, a Black Man?
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, am I? I am. I'm married. So when I saw that title, I said, oh, are you ready to love yourself, a Black Man? And then when I read some of your poetry in that, I could feel that. I'm a music head, so I know what you're talking about. I could feel that. So how did you move from poetry? Because your poetry is deep. That book is empty. It was really deep to
Thank
me,
you.
That piece that you wrote. So how did you move from poetry into children's literature?
It started, so the 'Cause I'm a Baby book, it's kind of based on a true story about my oldest daughter. She's she's 8 now. I wrote it when she was 2, and I think I wrote it in like an hour or something like that. This was maybe a little bit before COVID or like right when COVID started. So, you know, we were just in the house all the time, and she's doing her little toddler 2-year-old stuff, just throwing things around and crying and being a little sour patch. And it just flowed like off of my head. And as I was reading it, I don't even know how I eventually just thought, okay, this can be a children's book. But I think just talking with different people and exploring, Googling stuff, reading other things, I think probably reading other like children's books, it just seemed like it fit. And so I use the website Fiverr a lot, the freelance website, and I think it's kind of addicting. I had to like step back a little bit. But the illustrator, that's where I found the illustrator, and her portfolio is so great that, you know, we just started working together, and, you know, I get ideas from other people, and I think I'm a huge collaborator because I think that helps to grow expression, whether it's art, music, whatever it is. And we just kind of like took it from there. So my first book I self-published, so I kind of had that experience a little bit, and where it kind of took off.
Wow.
Yeah. Your second poetry book, though, was picked up by a publisher in Oregon, I think I saw, right?
Yeah.
Did you have any, like, was it a different experience to, for, like, self-publishing versus working with a publisher on something?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I think the contract, you know, really, identifies like how that relationship is going to be. And I like that publisher because it wasn't too constrained. It's like a 50-50 like split. But I think the way they picked up my book is just from a submission, like an open artist submission. And that's the book that I submitted. I didn't think it was going to get picked up, but they loved it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had like a few rounds of editing, and, you know, there's certain things with a publisher that, you know, I can do with self-publishing that I can't do like in my contract. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the biggest things is not having to like hustle as much. Mm. So like with the self-publishing, you know, you're finding the illustrator or the cover designer, you're finding the editor, you're doing the marketing, the advertising, and sometimes that just gets to be a lot. And you might lose motivation to do some of that stuff. You know, I find more reward in the actual like writing and maybe like sharing like at open mics or something like that, but having to like sell something, I don't really like that. Like I feel weird sometimes when people, you know, they say, okay, I'll buy your book just to support you. And that's not why I wrote it. Like, I want you to read it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you can compensate me or donate, but that's the reason. But I think it helped to have someone else do some of that work. And I can just focus on the writing. That's what I like the most.
Yeah, do the legwork, it sounds like, yeah. Well, I enjoyed reading Are You Ready to Love Yourself a Black Man, must say. I do want to read your other book, Because I'm a Baby.
Tell us a little bit about that book and the premise for that.
Yeah, so I wrote it from, like, the child's perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of like, I feel like parents are the target audience with that, and it mostly kind of just normalizes like that toddler like stage. So, you know, you hear about like terrible twos.
Yeah.
But it's like once you look back on it, it's kind of fun. But they know how to push your buttons. So I have an 8-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 6-month-old. And like the 2-year-old now, she just turned 2 in August, Eliana. And she's really like at that point. It's just like buttons you didn't know were buttons. And they just push it. But having that experience, you know, with our oldest child, it helped to have a more like calm and understanding approach, because, you know, sometimes you just kind of react and that emotion kind of comes up, and that has a real like impact on them, that frustration. And I think the book was kind of in my like, you know, own personal sense to kind of help normalize like that behavior for just day by day things that they do, just mess up the floor, the wall. And my thing is when you cook and you spend like hours cooking, they're crying, they're hungry, and then when you give it to them, and they're just like, I don't want it. That's a button.
Yeah.
So I think I, you know, touched on some of that stuff in the book, but it just kind of just to show that it's normal, like that range of emotions that they're developing and exploring their behaviors, the freedom of just learning about the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to have that appreciation for that stage in life.
I think so, too. I was listening to when you said that you have 3 kids and how, like, your first child, you kind of learned how to deal with those emotions. Mm-hmm. But your second child, same way. I have, like, a 31-year-old, a 25-year-old, and a 19-year-old. Mm-hmm. So each child has a different part of me because I've learned to grow in each relationship with them. So I feel you on that. Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about parenting, right? You're growing and learning and changing just as your kids are growing and learning and changing,
right.
You know? And you're trying to, you know, figure out parenting and how. I only have 1 child, but I know a lot of times with the first, like, you're trying so hard to get it right.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're trying too hard.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't take all that. Mm-hmm. So go out and buy, parents, go out and buy the book.
Yeah.
One thing I kind of learned to appreciate or realize is that you don't really learn how to become a parent until you become a grandparent. Like, I mean, I'm kind of assuming, but I just... observing like how my mom like interacts with kids. Not to say like, you know, she wasn't like a good parent or anything, but I can just tell like the approach is a little bit like different. Like that wisdom really allows you to, you know, just appreciate what they're going through. And I try to like challenge myself sometimes because, you know, if they're like eating candy or ice cream, you're like, no, you kind of want to be a good influence and like educate them, but you know, they go with grandma or something and they're just eating up everything. Yeah. I'm like, okay, am I doing this right? Like, she's been here before, like she knows what she's doing. So maybe I need to look at this a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And that kind of speaks to the purpose of the book sometimes too, just to make you think about what's going on and what you're doing.
Yeah. As a parent, I like that.
Yeah. Really looking at your own actions sometimes too. And how that, and I mean, that works for a lot of things, right? Just not parenting, but looking at your reactions to things and how, you know, that's going to come across to other people, or, you know, can only control yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Your own reactions.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about, because when you're talking, I'm thinking about that counselor hat that you wear, right? We haven't tapped into that yet, because that's when I'm seeing this author, but also counselor.
Yeah.
Do you find it therapeutic to write, and what helps you to find your voice?
Yes, I definitely do. And you know, sometimes you go through those like waves of writer's block or, you know, like that creative like energy. I think from the emotional side of it, especially developmentally, like for me too, experiencing different feelings, emotions, you know, going through like depression and anxiety, things like that, you try to find like ways to express. And I think that was a channel for me. And the interest in therapy or becoming a counselor started in high school from like a psychology class. I was like, wow, this is like a really interesting topic. And I've also found that people just like would naturally, you know, just feel comfortable with me and just like tell me stuff. And I'm like, dang, do I have to take this to my grave or what? Like the way they just, you know, just kind of divulge like information and are vulnerable with me. I really, you know, appreciate it, the respect and trust that they would build with me. And I think, you know, as I started to develop like with writing, started to develop like professionally too. And eventually, you know, I've been trying to like merge them a little bit, but I think writing has been such a like personal thing for me that, you know, I haven't took any like official approach or like steps to, okay, let's do this therapeutic approach with like writing. I think the children's book is probably like the closest, but that's more for, you know, like human development, like parenting. At the same time, after the shooting happened at MSU, because I was like on campus like at the time, and you know, as my role as a therapist like at Michigan State, that changed like a lot. And you know, just personally as a staff, it almost opened every pathway of trauma that I've like experienced, and that rechanneled writing like as a expression, and you know, just like that therapeutic sense for me. And it's funny, like the day that it happened, one of my colleagues, he put on like a group therapy using, you know, just like expressing yourself, basically, like creative expression. But that really reconnected that therapeutic approach for me. So I'm still kind of learning that and, you know, living through it. But, you know, several things just over time, just kind of reformulate who you are and, you know, the things that you do.
That was difficult for our whole community.
It was.
Robin and I have talked a lot about journaling. We both, Robin and I, do a lot of journaling. And in a sense, it's a type of therapy for me sometimes to sort of get it all out of my head and onto the page. And that helps me. But I was kind of curious if when you maybe do go through something like that, or, you know, you do kind of get it all out on the page, do you have to find other ways then to sort of bring yourself back up a little bit, or kind of refill your cup?
It does that sometimes. It's just the action of it, or, you know, like rereading it or like editing it, it almost helps to like refill in some ways. And it's kind of like the beauty of writing, and that speaks to its like therapeutic like role. Sometimes you can really feel those intense like emotions at the same time. Like maybe that's kind of what we need sometimes. It's almost like exposure therapy when you're like really thinking about something like head on and, you know, trying to process it. I do take that, you know, free verse type of approach. So sometimes I just kind of like let it out. I don't think in my head like, okay, I want to, you know, for some things it just kind of, but like the personal like stuff, it just kind of like comes out sometimes.
Just comes out,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a flow.
And that connects to the influence, like the Tupac, the DMX, the Eminem, like the old Eminem, the angry like Eminem. Mm-hmm. You know, I really like resonated like with that.
The 8 Mile Eminem.
With those emotions. I mean, and, you know, as an adolescent, like the anger, the irritability, that can be a sign of depression for, you know, a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw that in your poetry. Are you ready to love yourself a black man? I saw all the different directions. Like I could see from relationship to being a black man and in a professional setting, just how your poetry. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. I saw that.
And yeah. There's so many layers. Like
so
those
many layers.
Systems at play, the barriers and everything else. Mm-hmm. Just living in that. I think that's when things, you know, start to meet. Mm-hmm. Even if it's like subconsciously or unconsciously. I think Tupac said one time, when I write rhymes, I go blind and let the Lord do his thing. So it's like that spiritual like influence too. You just, I mean, just that trust and that faith behind it all as well.
Mm-hmm. As I was doing a little bit of research about you and that, I found an article that you had wrote about for Counseling Today called Life After Sport. Mm-hmm. And you were pretty open that you had an accident with a drunk driver and sustained some pretty serious injuries that sort of changed your life. Mm-hmm. And then from there, though, you went on to gain a master's certificate in addiction studies, and you counsel people who are struggling with mm-hmm. addiction. And so I was really struck by the idea of how did you move from just blaming somebody for this horrible accident to turning that to where you could help people?
Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I've like moved completely. I'm still living it every day in some ways, just because of the like loss of like identity with being an athlete, because it happened like my freshman year at MSU. You know, I was on scholarship and I really wanted to be like an Olympian and kind of use like poetry too as like, you know, my other hustle in some way. So that was kind of the dream, but it was just kind of like stripped from me, especially at a time where brain injuries and mental health wasn't as understood as it is now. So it was a lot of trial and error, and the writing, you know, had a role in that. But I think when I really started to get a sense of the bigger picture is when I took steps to kind of reformulate my identity and recognize like that it never left. Being an athlete is still like who I am. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm competitive. Like if it's Mario Kart, it doesn't matter. it's still there. It's just the injuries, because I was a high jumper and you know, I had to have like 5 surgeries on my knee. And that was the leg that I used to kind of like jump off of. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I deal with the physical pain. And but even from the mental element, like once you get to, you know, collegiate, professional level, a lot of it becomes mental. And that's where you see the differences in that like elite status, just, you know, how people think, how they persevere. And that's where it, you know, really started to click for me during my internship, because I was in Chicago and I was interning at Columbia College, Chicago, which is like another like creative like school. So, you know, it's kind of like with my peoples in some way. And it just clicked like, wow, I can do this with athletes. And, you know, once I graduated and I came back to MSU and, you know, I really started to, you know, pursue like the second master's degree with, because I didn't have like a lot of kinesiology experience or like education, like background. So that was another way to kind of reconnect with the sport field and the athletic field. And I'm starting to realize now just how rewarding like learning is. Mm-hmm. There's like a sense of reward you get like when you're like learning something.
And, yeah.
Wouldn't say it's addicting, but it's reinforcing for sure. So that just allowed me to kind of get back to my roots and continue to say to myself, like, okay, I can, you know, still like do this, you know, I can still have an impact, I can still help people, and I can kind of pursue my dreams in like a different like way. I mean, it wasn't what I thought, but still can pay off.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a work in progress, but it's where I am right now.
Mm-hmm. Right. You just took a different path to get there.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's an acceptance piece that kind of comes with it, or almost is required in order to get to that point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That acceptance is, I think, the hardest part sometimes, and the struggle. And like you said, it doesn't always happen right away or right when you want it to. It takes a long time to get there. I know some of the things I've experienced in my life have been like that. I'm still working through it for sure.
And that's the thing too. Like we're all kind of, you know, going through our like own things. You know, there's so much that people don't share to like anyone, that they just kind of keep inside, they internalize. And when you think about it, like we're human beings, right? On earth, we don't know what's going on, what we're doing, but we're just here. And we're a lot more similar than we think. You know, shenanigans make us forget that. Or
And, you know, it's interesting, too. I always think as humans, we often like to plan, right? We have these, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that, and then we're going to, this is
our plans.
Our plans, and then there's often, they get derailed. You know, just by life, by circumstances, things that happen. And so your plan is often different than what the other plan is for you, or, you know, if you're spiritual, you know, God might have a different path or plan for you.
So, but you'll get where you need to be.
Exactly. It's you end up where you need to be at the end of the day.
I think COVID really taught me, at least, that you really need other like people. So like that reformulation of the plan or just acceptance of like a new like path is also influenced by like others, you know. Trying to do that on your own, you might not click, or you might not get that like understanding or realization or whatever it may be. But just others, not even just like therapy, just friends or just being with people, you know, a lot's going on in the brain. And I think COVID, like the isolation, quarantine really like taught me, at least, that it's valuable just having each other as humans.
Yeah, it taught me community is important. My people. My people. Amy, you're my people.
Robin's one of my people.
Yeah, so listen, community is important. And I never thought about community like that until COVID. And I was isolated. I'm like, wait a minute, where are my people? Where's my community? And then when we started to come together, I was like, okay, I see my community now.
So it's wild. That was 5 years ago.
I know.
Almost six now.
I know. And COVID is still lingering. Yeah. What roles does spirituality play in your work and life? Because it sounds like there's some grounding there. What's going
on?
Yeah,
for sure. I think the grounding is an accurate way to describe it. I mean, I think I kind of grew up like Baptist in some ways, at least like attending like Baptist churches.
And, I think we are to go somewhere.
It really defined like that foundation for me, just like that relationship to God, each other, the nature, the universe, like whatever it is. I think that kind of served as a foundation. And, you know, I think my mom is a big piece of that. I recently realized like she gave herself to God probably before I was born, or, you know, around that time, at least from, you know, what I can observe. And I mean, that's kind of a big shoe to fill or to live up to. But just, it never, at least from what I can see, it never like swayed or derailed. I mean, you probably have your natural doubts, questions, whatever it is. But when she would speak with me or my sister, that faith was as always, you know, a central like core like piece of her motivation and, you know, who she is. And I think that kind of comes full circle, like for me, even with, I think like intellectually, you know, I really try to like understand. And, you know, there's a lot of different like interpretations of various like religions and, you know, the Bible, the Quran, whatever it might be. And I try to, you know, just keep that central piece, that faith, and just being grounded and just taking a harmonious like approach and being okay with that, because it makes it less like complicated. But I think that helps to connect with other people too, from various walks of life, faith, whether they're atheists or, you know, like the Pope or something like that. I think we're, end of the day, we're all still like human beings. So
So kind of going back to what we were talking about a moment ago, but it does seem like we're living through some very difficult times right now. And there's a lot of people who are suffering from anxiety and depression. And if you could maybe take a moment and share with our listeners how you find joy in life when things seem dark and overwhelming, and What thoughts do you have for our listeners who may be feeling those things?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an ongoing thing as well. And just try to survive. I think I visualize what I want a lot. Like, I'm a visual, like, person. I think imagery is kind of like a big piece of just how I think. And that kind of goes back to that reward, just seeing something that I want and removing the doubt and the barriers and questioning if I can or the shenanigans. just kind of like sometimes you have to take away instead of, it's not really like, okay, what can I do to feel better? Mm. Sometimes it's, you know, taking some of those things and just naturally you'll just kind of like fall into place. But just the generals, so that social like element, I think being with people is a big piece. I think personally that kind of goes into like the foundation of love, like that I have. I think that really describes like who I am. Just and kind of get that with like writing and performing too, like just the goal of, you know, when you're in front of a bunch of people and you kind of want that standing ovation, that's that love, right? That's that's a goal that you kind of like strive for. So you're focused on the steps to get there, what it feels like, what you want, and the shenanigans doesn't really kind of impair it. I mean, it does, but you know, when you're doing it like right and successful, that's what you're focused on. And sometimes, you know, it's really hard to get to that point. But if you don't lose sight of it and just try not to like give up, I think things will start to fall in place if you continue to make those like steps, whatever it, you know, might be, just something that you love, whether it's a person or a goal. I think that is a good starting point, at least for me, for sure.
That's a good thought.
Finding joy in what you love. And just sitting in it. That's what I got. Yeah. I'm going to just sit in it. It may be uncomfortable, but it'll come. Things will work out. Just sit in it.
Your perspective begins to change at that point.
Yeah, it does. Oh my gosh, our time is up. Thank you, Chris, for sharing this space with us and time with us today. Mm-hmm. I encourage our listeners to read some of Chris's work in poetry. His poetry book, Are You Ready to Love Yourself a Black Man? I love saying that. It is available on Amazon. I actually downloaded it on my Kindle, so I'm really excited about that, so I can always reference it and go back. Links to his other works and articles will be linked in our show notes for today's episode. Thank you to all of our listeners for listening. And thank you, Chris, for gracing us with your presence today.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for love.
Yes. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
You have been listening to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond. Visit lcc.edu/library to find the titles discussed in this episode. You can find previous episodes of Written in the Stars and other LCC Connect shows at lccconnect.com. In the words of Miguel de Unamuno, I hope, reader, we shall meet again and we shall recognize each other.